Thanks for joining us. This is Notepad with me, Ibrahim Sani. We continue our election coverage called Economics of Election, where we slice and dice the impact of the economy in regard of election. And when we talk about the elections, we talk about travel, we talk about the coverage of how people are going to move towards their locality, move towards the places that they vote. One key item is, of course, where do they stay? Particularly when they have moved away from their election constituency and perhaps think about and have domiciled elsewhere and think about returning back to their locality or hometowns during the election period. Having said that, you still need to travel even if there's no elections taking place. Because of this, it's timely for us to have a chat with our good friend over at Airbnb. This is Mitch Goh joining us from Singapore. She is the Airbnb Head of Public Policy at Southeast Asia. How are you, Mitch? Maybe you can share with us some of the items when it comes to tourism. As we all know, it gradually resumes back. Perhaps share with us some of the global trends and global travel trends that have changed during this post-pandemic period.
So I think the past 2.5 years since the pandemic started has been quite interesting for the tourism industry, to say the least. But we've observed some really, really big trends that have changed when it comes to travel and tourism. So I think the very first trend that we're seeing is that people are now traveling for longer periods of time. So we're also seeing that reflected in the bookings on the Airbnb platform. So trips of about 28 days or more are our fastest growing category of stays compared to pre-pandemic. The second big change that we're also seeing is that people have a lot more flexibility over how they travel. So perhaps it's because of flexible work arrangements or hybrid work models, but people now have more opportunities to travel. So we're seeing a lot more spontaneous weekend trips or travel during off-peak periods. And we've also seen a very large interest in using like flexible search tools. So we recently launched a I'm Flexible search tool in 2021. And since its inception, it's already been used over 2 billion times. The last sort of broad big change that we're seeing, and I think it's one of the most important ones, is that we're really seeing travel disperse out of the typical tourist areas. So travelers are traveling increasingly to off the beaten path locations. And we've seen a huge growth in non-urban nights booked on our platforms throughout the Asia-Pacific region.
How has these trends played out at the local level in Malaysia? Do you think that this will impact the local tourism industry in the long run?
Yeah, so I think I spoke a little bit about travel dispersal and people being interested in off-the-beaten-path destinations. So all of this data is actually based on an APAC report that we just published called Further Afield. And we are really seeing a huge consumer interest in locations that are in more rural areas or away from the urban metropolises. So people are seeing a huge kind of interest and desire to travel to more nature-driven places. So beaches, forests, mountains are all becoming increasingly popular. And we are also seeing that play out in Malaysia. So we've seen really interesting trends, actually. We've seen places like Ipoh, Kuala, Seminyak and Port Dickson become increasingly popular. And they are like one of our top few trending destinations when it comes to non-urban destinations. We've also seen huge interest in places like Marang in Terengganu, where searches more than doubled compared to in the second quarter of 2019. So I think all of this is a really great thing because it helps to bring travel away from where from communities that have traditionally benefited from travel, and it helps more and more people experience the benefits of travel. So if you imagine someone going on a holiday to a new place that has not really seen travel in the past or tourists in the past, people are going to be spending money on local businesses, they're spending money staying with hosts, and all of this have trickle-down impacts on the broader economy.
What would be some of the opportunities that lie ahead when it comes to tourism? Do you feel that tourism dispersal provide the local communities in Malaysia some access and opportunities? And perhaps what about the region as well?
Yeah, so I think the opportunities actually abound for a potential host who's thinking of hosting, especially if you're in a non-urban area. So looking back to that report that I mentioned earlier about the dispersal of tourism in APAC, we also saw that host earnings, especially for hosts in non-urban areas, have increased by 1/3 compared to pre-pandemic times. So the economic opportunity that exists is even bigger now for a potential host in a non-urban area. And I think when we polled people also, we did a separate poll in late 2021, where we worked with a company called ClearPath to essentially poll Malaysians for broadly what they thought about short-term rental industry. And we saw that two-thirds of Malaysians actually believe that short-term rental has the potential to help bring more tourism dollars to local communities and to local neighborhoods. So I think to summarize, like the travel boom and the travel resurgence that we are now seeing presents huge opportunities for local Malaysians to share their homes and to earn and reap the benefits of the travel revolution.
In light of these travel changes right now, how has Airbnb ensured that it continues to meet the needs of travelers?
Yeah, of course. So I think the main thing that we're trying to do is we're trying to partner and we're trying to collaborate across the industry and with government as well. I think it's very, very exciting that guests have changed their minds about what travel looks like in a post-pandemic world and that they're exploring new places and off-the-beaten-path places. So what we're trying to do now is we're trying to work more closely with governments and with industry players also in tourism to share more and to share new exciting opportunities for people to travel in terms of, say, new destinations that maybe governments want to feature. So instead of promoting just Penang or Kuala Lumpur, maybe there is a local beach in Terengganu that the government would like to promote. And that's where we believe that private and public sector collaboration would play a big role in driving travel interests to new places that have not traditionally seen the benefits of travel. Apart from that, also as a platform, we are constantly thinking about how we innovate. So we launch product launches every 6 months, and we've launched a couple of interesting new tools also that play into this trend. So one of them is the idea of categories. I think in the past, when you think about searching for travel, or when a guest or potential traveler thinks about searching for travel, they think first about a destination. But what we began to realize also is that people have an interest in going and staying in unique accommodation. And so now we've also made categories a search, part of our search. And so you can find interesting accommodations across different categories, such as beaches, farms, villas, even private islands. And what this does is that it helps to raise the profile of places that may not traditionally have been very top of mind to travelers. And it helps provide travel inspiration for our guests to travel to an area that they may not have thought about prior to searching on our platform.
Perhaps you can share with us your travel outlook for next year and what lies beyond.
Yeah, of course. So I think the tourism industry is looking very, 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 very promising. So coming out of 2 years of the pandemic where people have not been able to meet their friends or have not been able to travel in larger groups, we're seeing a huge desire for people to travel more often and to places where they would not have thought about going to in the past. So all of these are really, really promising signs. And we already know that Malaysians are very much into travel. In fact, when we polled for Malaysians as part of the ClearPath survey that I mentioned before, we knew that already half of them had stayed in a short-term rental accommodation before, and one-third of them had already stayed in an accommodation for remote work purposes. So I think all of these places, short-term rental accommodations such as Airbnb, really is an important category in the tourism industry. And I think short-term rental will play an increasing role as people are starting to think about where they want to travel with friends and family, and also where they want to travel to for remote work. So remote work is another big thing that we're seeing, which maybe also plays into this idea of people having more flexibility. But Airbnb as a business has also started to pull together the findings and the learnings that we have. We recently released a report called the Live and Work Anywhere Guide, which is essentially a guide for governments and destinations that are thinking about attracting remote workers to their destination. And it gives them several tips for how to adjust visa policies or think about destination promotion. So we're also very heartened to hear that Malaysia has launched something fairly similar in the DE Rantau program, which is aimed at also showcasing destinations that are remote work friendly and digital nomad friendly in the country.
Thanks. That was Mitch Goh, the Airbnb Head of Public Policy at Southeast Asia. We'll go for a short break. When we come back, we'll discuss with Cohesity and discuss with them about how companies can better protect themselves through data management and ransomware attacks, not just during the elections, but of course, when the elections is over, companies need to really think about how to better budget themselves even further. That's happening after the break. We'll be right back after these messages. Continue to stay with us in our new segment called The Economics of Elections on Notepad. Thanks for joining us. This is Notepad with me, Ibrahim Sani. We continue on our election coverage with the economics of election. But at the same time, we need to keep track of what is happening around the world in terms of business and in terms of economy. Joining us from Singapore is our good friend, Satish Murthy. Of course, he is of Cohesity. There's a lot to be unpacked. But before we jump into that, maybe you could share with us, Satish, in terms of what Cohesity does and what kind of clients do you have?
Yeah, thank you, Ibrahim. Thank you for having me here. And Cohesity is the leader for data management, and we build great platform for enterprises. I think we lead in three things: building data management platform, data security, and also in terms of leading towards the cloud solutions.
Could you share with us some of the ideas in terms of what would be the key challenges in terms of what you're trying to do and execute what you need to do? Versus the kind of opportunities that lie ahead, what kind of business opportunities that Cohesity might be able to expound on?
No, thank you. So, you know, there's plenty of data in the enterprises, and data is on a deluge, right? So that means data is massively increasing for every enterprise, and they are struggling to cope up with this massive deluge of data. So if you look at traditional technologies or legacy, it's been very, very hard to manage. How do I consolidate? How do I take care of the backup? And one of the biggest threat we see today is the cyber threat. So across all these segments, if you would watch, Cohesity would like to help enterprises to build a data platform that can help consolidate the data and also protect this data, help them to have business continuity, and help them to transition to the modern architectures.
I know you're not a political pundit at all, but it's important for us to keep this interview topical. Malaysia is facing the 15th general election very soon, in fact, just in a few weeks. And because of this, a lot of businesses might not necessarily keep track or give the entirety of their focus in terms of data management, data security, and perhaps investing in this type of space. Perhaps you could share with us how businesses, both in Malaysia and beyond, could keep business continuity going despite mega events that is happening in the country, like the general elections.
Absolutely. So thank you. So if you look at Malaysia by itself, Malaysia has invested 73 million ringgit just focused on cybersecurity and cyber threat, right? This was done a couple of years ago with a focus on how do we build architectures and help your enterprises to build and protect the data against unnecessary threats that comes in. The threat can be severe, as we have seen in other countries and other parts of the world. Across ASEAN and including Malaysia, we are thankful that customers understand the threats that are posed and how they can evolve from these, right? How they can move away from these kind of threats. And there are stringent measures. There are CISO officers who have been focused or tasked to make sure that they can strengthen the data and data protection acts within their organization and across beyond their shores, right? Across whoever is the vendors or customers that they interact with, right? And Malaysia is in the forefront of helping towards moving towards that.
Yes, but my question is specifically on how businesses can remain focused and steadfast despite ongoing events like the elections. Maybe you can share with us some ideas on this.
Oh, thank you. So I'm not, you're right, I'm not a pundit on the election, but definitely large enterprises and mid-tier enterprises, they are absolute target for cyber threats, right? That is not, will it happen or would it happen? It is only when it would happen or when a ransomware threat would happen. So the idea here is to make sure that we are always on the curve of learning and curve of making sure that the teams are strong. That means they are trained well, whoever is the IT staff, the users are understandable that, hey, why does this organization help in terms of locking certain things, right? And it's a overall evolving journey in protecting the data in the data center as well as the end user's data. So that is something that as a company today, every organization should think about, hey, whether election or not, the data is absolutely critical and can we move towards protecting that?
Again, to stay on topic and in conversation with the current events that is currently happening in the country right now, during elections, normally we see a rise in cyber trolls. We were seeing a rise in terms of fake accounts, and these fake accounts can take a life on its own. previously, we see this rampant on Facebook. Now we're seeing it everywhere on social media, and more than that, including attacks, DDoS attacks, for instance, on news websites, for instance. Do you feel that these kind of events can help us learn better on how to protect ourselves online and perhaps how to manage our data better?
Good point, Ibrahim. I think if you look at what is happening around the world, we see an attack almost every 11 seconds, right? That is the industry study. Almost every 11 seconds, some attack or something happens, right? I'm not talking about the trolls here. Just in terms of business being attacked, which is severe. I mean, you have critical infrastructures that possibly drives business, drives election, drives data. That's an attack in every 11 seconds. Now, talking about the trolls and other things, that is something of a special interest to take care of that, which is also important. But looking at the criticality of something, can this change a result? Can this change a business outcome? That is a serious impact. And we do see, customers taking actions, customers building towards that. You know, the more vendors like us tell customers to say, hey, are you up on the curve? Are you learning in terms of, do you have advanced technology? I have a phrase that one of my customers always quote, you can't solve modern problems with legacy technology.
Okay, that's right. But perhaps you can share with us the immediate remedy to these kind of everlasting problems.
Absolutely. So the problem which we are facing has to be looked at beyond a traditional IT, right? You got to look at what is your critical competence that you have. Can we start with an assessment? Can we understand what are the, say, let's take a simple thing as network. Is your network protected? Is the end user's laptop protected? Is the data in the data center protected? So you look at multiple segments here, making sure that it is an overall journey of zero trust. We call this as zero trust because you don't trust anything in IT, right? If you know the password, you don't know the password, that's fine. But making sure that we build a zero trust architecture, which is resilient, and that's how you start to evolve and become a cyber resilient organization.
Okay. We'll go for one short break before we continue our conversation with Satish Murthy, the Director of Systems Engineering at Cohesity. Thanks for staying on with us. This is Notepad. We are covering the elections as well as the business as usual and economic affairs of the country in our sub-segment of the show called The Economics of Elections. Joining us via video conferencing in Singapore is Satish Murthy, the Director of Systems Engineering at Cohesity. They specialize in data management and systems protocol. Perhaps we can talk a little bit more about this item even further. Satish, let's understand a little bit better about prevention being the important aspect of this. But of course, prevention is no longer enough. We need to also focus on why organizations today need to think about recovery. I don't normally talk about recovery generally, so this topic is actually quite interesting and intriguing for me. What would be some of the ideas or top-line ideas that you can share with us in terms of organizations focusing on recovery?
Great question. So if you look at this, Ibrahim, we as IT or IT staff who are there for 20, 30 years, they've always been trained on things like impact on storage, impact on data, impact on VM. They know how to recover from that. But we never thought about one day a complete blackout of data in the data center. This is unusual. So you got to understand that something that you learned in the past is not going to help you in the future. A large-scale attack can take your business out for weeks. So how do you make sure that you can accelerate the recovery? Can you accelerate the business by recovering, say, the entire data center's data in next maybe 6 hours or 8 hours and bring your business back to life? This is something, a question that every single business is trying to address. And Cohesity, thankfully, is in the forefront of recovery today. We have a very unique technology out there.
Of course, let's share that technology that you can share with your clients. What kind of technology that you're talking about?
This technology is called the Instant Mass Recovery, where you could recover massive amount of data at very large scale back to its operations. Assuming that you had a cyber attack, how fast can a business come back to life? We have seen that example. Allow me to quote a quick example out there. We had a hospital by the name of Skylakes, and they had a serious impact of data where the entire hospital records 2,500 PCs and every operation got stalled. And thankfully, there was cohesivity to roll back the entire data center, and the hospital was back in life in less than a day.
Fantastic. Final word, Satish, maybe you can share with us the kind of behavior that corporates these days need to think about, and of course, the comparing and contrasting that with SMEs or SMBs. How are they treating this whole concept of prevention and recovery? Is this at their forefront of their focus? And perhaps, what would be some of the budget or budgetary thinking that is required in order for them to completely fund this and make sure that this is a sustainable activity for their businesses, large and small?
Fantastic. So protecting from cyber threats is an absolute necessity, be it small, medium, or big, because every company needs to protect itself. So you got multiple ways to protect data. It could be on-premises, could be on the cloud. You can leverage multiple options out there. So the budgets can be very, very small, all the way to very large. If you're a large enterprise and you need to protect your data, you need this massive amount of funding. But if you look at from a very, very small perspective, Cohesity supports, say, we have a technology called Fortinox. As the name sounds, it is to protect your data on the cloud, right? It's a Fortinox. And then you move and evolve. Some of the large enterprises in Malaysia would enjoy, they want to build their own cyber resilience vault, right? So from a budget perspective, it could be as small as few thousands of ringgits all the way to multi-million if you would like to build such resilient architecture. But one thing to imagine and think about, it is a journey of cyber resilience. It's not one day I fix everything and I can say I'm absolutely assured, but it is a journey. And I'll just add one more point here. Ransomware is a serious threat. Cyber resilience is a serious threat. There are actors, there are bad actors, and we got to be very aware and build our data in terms of making sure that our enterprise is top of the curve to protect the data.
Maybe before we end, I want to pick your brains on that. Election is, of course, a key element in terms of hyperactivity online, and of course, ransomware and any other ill intent behavior is heightened during this moment. Do you feel that, you know, the thinking has to be done now before anything untoward happens to the corporate, and perhaps critical data loss will happen before or after the elections? Do you feel that now is the time to really think about this solutioning right now?
Absolutely, Ibrahim. If you see there's serious threat, I did mention about every 11 seconds an enterprise is impacted. When there is,
By the way, that number is still. I'm dumbfounded by the number. Yeah, 11
yeah,
seconds.
Yeah, valid.
Throughout this interview, we're talking about 100 attacks already.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's some serious attack. Whether they breach the security or not, the attack is always happening. These are sophisticated robotic programs which keep attacking every single organization. They try to find loopholes in any organization. They could disrupt anything today, right? They could disrupt trains, they could disrupt hospitals, power grids, as we have seen and noted. They could disrupt factories. So how do we make sure that enterprises are on top of the curve and take advanced technology, very similar to Cohesity or beyond, to make sure that how do we protect the data, in case if it is impacted, how fast can you recover? So both are extremely important to understand. And I really thank you for that question, and hoping that every single enterprise lead and learn in terms of cyber resilience today.
Thank you very much. That was Satish Murthy, Director of Systems Engineering at Cohesity, joining us from Singapore. And of course, we continue our coverage of the elections called The Economics of Elections during the 15th general election. Do stay on with me on this topic. Of course, we continue on the coverage of elections across all the other shows on this channel. So do stay on with us there as well. This is Ashrawani, your 15th general election channel.